want insight and solutions? You're in for a unique experience, one where you're free to ask questions about where you're stuck, ask and hear questions of an everyday variety, global or personal, deep or ancient. All questions are welcome. Any human issue or problem is seen with a new awareness from Patricia's powerful understanding of whole brain thinking. Receive insights you never thought were possible, and be comforted to hear some insights you always knew were right. Discover the profound and the creative value that problems can give us. And now, Patricia Sun.
Welcome to Trust the Problem. Today, we're going to talk about Halloween. It is Halloween, but we're going to talk about it in a very different way, hopefully a spiritual way. And I'm also going to talk about, in the second half, or maybe mix it in, I'm not sure how, about the vote and about democracy and why it is so important what is happening to humanity right now in terms of becoming conscious. You know, I think it's time for a spiritual understanding of customs like Halloween and a spiritual understanding of politics. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I think that, and my name is Patricia Sun, and I'm very glad you're with me. And to talk about Halloween is very interesting to just go a little bit back into the history. It's over 2,000 years old. And the reason why it's been around so long is it deals with something that people have had so much trouble with. And it's about death, and it's about spirit, and it's about what happens to us when we're gone. And are we anywhere? And more than that, it has to do with the fervent belief of most human beings through most of human history that our ancestors are with us, that they are still part of us, that they're here in some way. And there's all kinds of versions of that. There's everything from channeling to the Chinese respect for the ancestors. And it's not just Chinese. It's very, very old. It's in American Indian, it's in Europe, it's in the Celts. It's in the Catholic religion, which was the Christian religion until the Reformation. And it's been around so long. And it is a respect for spirit as it is individuated by a person, so a person's spirit, and all the people who have lived and how they have influenced us, how they have... they're still with us in the sense that they're physiologically, we are their offspring, we carry their DNA, we have the same patterns in many ways, and nothing identical because we're all unique, but still it is only the combinations that change, which is not a big, you know, which is not a little only, it's a big only, combinations matter, but we are physiologically, psychically, culturally, socially, spiritually, intuitively connected to the ancestors. And Halloween is a celebration of that. And of course, I'm sure most listeners know that Halloween is a term that means a holy eve. And it used to mean the holy time of celebrating the souls of the past, and it was called All Souls Day. And in the Catholic Church, tried to narrow it down to saints at some point so that we would celebrate the saints. But actually, you know, it's been a powerful day of celebration for something holy, which is what Halloween means, Holy Eve. And its origins, of course, are pre-Christian, but Christianity definitely came on with it and recognized it, as I said before, primarily as the celebration of saints, souls, the souls that count, I guess. And so what I think is important is to even look at what have we done to that? What have we done to All Saints' Eve? And what have we asked our children to do with it? And of course, it's part of the reason it's turned into what it's turned into is that as people began to think about their ancestors and spirits they started to think of evil things, too, you know, bad ancestors, or how if there's a spirit, there's a Holy Spirit, there's a good spirit, and then the bad spirit, you know, is demons or devils or the devil or whatever. So in our either-or thinking, we could never have anything be all good. Our thinking just doesn't go that way. We start to see everything as good. Then up comes almost like a shadow inside us, the counterpart. Okay, what's the opposite thing? And of course, just as this whole celebration and idea was about things we feared and loved and revered and didn't understand, it's a great magnetic grab bag for any shadow that we're holding. Any unfinished consciousness is going to go in there. And I think the scientific revolution was a battle against religion as organized religion, and more than just organized religion, even the spiritual aspects of religion that are not religiosity and dogma and stuff, but the spiritual experience that religion, in its true essence, means. Even the word religion means linked to that which is greater. So there is a greater sense of connection to not only all life and each other, but to spirit, that there is something that's greater than us all, that is in all of us, that we are in it, it is in us, and it's everywhere. And that recognition is almost universal, and from that recognition sprang many, many religions and many offshoots of religions and cults and just different denominations, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And for the Catholic Church, there was a great big revolution with the Reformation, because it had gotten so decadent and it was so money-oriented, and people would buy indulgences to save their soul and be freed of their sins so they could commit all kinds of sins and pay money to the church, and they'd get a bill of indulgence so that they didn't have to pay, go to hell for it. So it's so another swing to the material, mechanical consciousness, which has its place. I mean, I'm not saying, not in that case, but I mean the material, mechanical, has its place in our reality. The problem is that what we tend to do with old-style thinking, which is pretty much common all around the world, is we think either or. So either it's spirit and it's holy, or it's spirit and it's evil. That's one way to handle it, all being spirit. Or then there's the sort of atheist or agnostic view, where, or scientific in some cases view, not all, thank God, many scientists know there's a link to that which is greater, and it's where all the best ideas in science come from. So it's about dogmas, and in fact, science in modern times in many ways has made the same kind of split religion did. And it's very similar to religion. It is a religion. It has its dogma and its rules and its narrow-mindedness in its social organization. But it also has a deep awareness and connection to paying attention to what is. And that's a very spiritual component. And that's what beautiful, powerful parts of all the religions of the world at their core are about, which is to pay attention to that link that is greater and have a sense of how does it work and ask questions and look at it and try to find the guidance inside. And Carl Jung always spoke about this very well, I think. And so we're at a crossroads again, and maybe we're always at a crossroads, but this time it's really kind of big because the whole world is globally connected. We have email, we have TV, we have phones, we have faxes, we have computers, we can store information, we can videotape things, we can play it back and see what people really said. But one thing we seem not to be able to do too well just yet, because of the shadow, which is the other part of what I'm going to talk about today, is that we don't have very good ability to stay conscious around things that are really important that scare us. And that, in America, would be the vote. And that we have set up the vote to be fake and to have no way of telling if it is. No way of telling if the vote's been hacked or changed. This is a very interesting problem. And that the media is only sort of talking about it 2 weeks before the election. Now, we went through this, you know, sort of in 2000. We definitely went through it in 2004. So that's 6 years. And for the last 2 years, we've known that the voting machines don't work. Computer scientists all over the place. I remember when I had my other show, they call in and say, you know, this is just not possible. You can't have only electronic voting because it's so easy to alter. All you need is the key. All you need is the way to get in. And every system has one because they need it to fix it if something goes wrong. Because there are, as we all know, we all have computers pretty much these days, and we know things happen. There's glitches, things freeze, things don't work. And a lot of that, they don't know why that happens. But and that's why they call them bugs. You know, it's like I understand that term came about because somebody's computer had ants in it. And so they were bugs in the computer, and it wasn't working, right? So it's a great metaphor. Okay, so why are we so blind? Why is the media blind? Both political parties, well, I can sort of see why they may be. But the citizenry, why do we not care? How can we not make the link? Oh, gee, if when we vote, somebody can go in and just change it, well, we don't have a democracy anymore. We have a fake election. We have a fake vote. That's what you get. So I'm going to talk more about that later, but I'm going to talk a little bit more still about Halloween, because Halloween, and they are sort of related. It's kind of interesting. Halloween is about appeasing our fears. It's about confronting things we intuitively or emotionally or psychically or spiritually feel, the link to our forefathers, to our ancestors, and the influence it has on us. And of course, I've always looked at this in quite a psychological way, and I've always been psychic, really. I don't usually say that. In fact, that's probably the first time I've ever said that on the air. But the reason I don't say it, and I remember years ago I was interviewed at the San Francisco Chronicle, and they had a huge Sunday full page in the main body of the paper, and the big pullout they used for me, which I thought was interesting, because the interviewer asked me if I was psychic. And I said, well, because I basically consider myself a philosopher, someone who uses their intuition, their love, to think of new ways of dealing with people and to dealing with problems and to dealing with reality. So what this person asked me was, do you consider yourself psychic? And I said, well, you know, I drive a car, and I drive very well. But I don't really think, if someone asked me if I was a driver, I'd say I'm a driver. I mean, yeah, I drive. But I'm not a driver. It's not the only thing I do. And so I feel that way about psychicness, that we all are, that it's a natural extension of our intelligence, that it's not woo-woo, that it's not something that is made up a lot of the way that Halloween is. In many ways, I don't even really believe in channeling, though I know many people of goodwill who channel, who really, from my point of view, use an intuitive part of their mind, make a way to have it be separate so that it isn't governed by the rules of fear and regulation that you can't do that, that we're culturally indoctrinated with, and we put it over to a side, and we call it somebody else, so we call it another state, and then we get information that comes through intuitively. And in my experience, even the very, very best psychics, especially if they call themselves psychics, at the very, very best, are only about 80% correct, and the vast majority are more like 10% correct that are still psychic. So it's always somewhere in there, but never 100%, because we are always learning, and there is, depending on the subject matter, there is, or maybe I should say there are, so many concepts and ideas and information that cannot be put into words, cannot be defined, cannot be said yet, because they transcend how we box things right now. And our growth, our evolutionary growth, our intellectual growth, our spiritual growth, our psychological and mental growth, emotional growth, is all about expanding the boundaries on those boxes so we can communicate more accurately and create more room to perceive more. So in that sense, of course, it's all very interesting and understandable. But as long as we don't take it too seriously and box it too fast, give it too much structure that we really don't have the information for. Often I find many people who channel make up all kinds of structure, and human beings have always done that, to make a reason or a validation as to why what they're saying is true. I have a friend who follows, it's almost a cult, this person who channels, and we used to have disagreements on this, and she said to me once, well, if you're right, and this is just the person's intuitional mind, if they ever admitted that, then nobody'd listen to them. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, we love to be fooled. We love it when it's pony. We love it when it's exaggerated. We love it when it makes us feel more comfortable because it simplistically takes care of all the loose ends and makes us feel right. And I guess that's my segue into the boat and our inability to have the media. I know they're owned by corporations. I've written an article about this, by the way, called Fake Vote, Fake Democracy. I'm going to put it online on my website, patriciasun.com. And it is about the link between corporate soullessness. And I don't mean that everybody who works for a corporation is souls, everybody. People are good. People have souls. But corporations are contrivances of the collective that really don't have a soul, except the collective souls of everybody in it. And if we give corporations, as we do in our country, power to be like a person, to donate money, like a person can vote, a corporation can donate money. I really think that if corporations were not allowed to donate money, and only individuals, if the Supreme Court thinks it's freedom of speech of individual citizens, not corporate entities, because as Abraham Lincoln said, and I have this in my article on the website, it's a fabulous quote from Abraham Lincoln on how important this aggregated wealth into a few hands, as he says, is to the survival of the nation and the country. And this is what Abraham Lincoln said in 1864. Quote, I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. As a result of the war, corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corporation in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudice of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. He continues, I feel at this moment more anxiety for the safety of my country than ever before, even in the midst of war. Abraham Lincoln, 1864. And of course, he is precognitive. He's prescient. This is it. This is where we are. And we are right at the brink of it, and we're kind of just blindly avoiding Now, when things get too scary, now we're back to Halloween. When things get too scary, the demons and the goblins, they're going to get us. And the things that go bump in the night, as my Irish grandmother would say. When things get too scary, we make things up to project our fear upon. Sometimes we have some realness to it, some real person or issue. But usually that's way exaggerated, and we need the escapism. We need the not knowing. We want to not know. And we want something that will help us not know. And with the global warming and the global contamination, the global nuclear waste problem, let alone nuclear bomb problem, which we've now started up again, which was almost under control until the Bush administration refused to sign the proliferation agreement. So we are now at the brink of looking at our immaturity, and the Hallows Eve, the Holy Eve, the All Saints Eve, that was turned into Halloween of demons and goblins and witches and things that are scary, that we put on our children so that they can go door to door and get candy, which, you know, like, what other enticement would be better? To totally, I believe, actually, psychologically, to wear out our residual fears of demons and goblins and things that go up at night, that our immature, intuitive mind is, by definition of its immaturity, afraid of any kind of psychic imagery that is scary, that it doesn't understand. And when the intuitive mind has fear added into it, it will conjure up images, all the images of demons and goblins and, you know, Hieronymus, I can't pronounce his name, Bach, the painter with the, in the Middle Ages, with all the horrible demons and things that we were all going to have to face. This fear is only our own shadow. It is only that which in us we have not digested and do not understand. And like our ancestors before, and with their collusion and with their inheritance, we have these remnants of terror, and we do things that are cruel. We human beings do out of unprocessed wounds and injury. We have compulsions, we have addictions, we have fears that we don't know how to contain. And it's in everything from sex to politics to family life to just how we even feel about our bodies. There's so much that humanity is walking around in terror about, each individual with slightly different versions. And I remember when I was a little girl, I was on a school bus. I've told this story before, but it really fits here, I think. And I should preface this to say, I believe we're in the midst of an evolutionary leap, and part of it is that our intuitive mind's going to mature and our logical mind's going to mature. And logical mind, when it's mature, it keeps accurate track of facts. It doesn't need to distort things into black and white so you can always be right. It takes things as they really are, which is not only shades of gray, but a billion, trillion, zillion tones and colors and shades. And so reality is so rich and full of possibility that when we think black and white, we are made instantly narrow-minded. We are made instantly ignorant. We are made instantly unable to be creative and think of solutions that lie outside the poles. So this is very important. And the fears that we have generate our attachment, that's immature intuitive thinking, generate our attachment to immature logic, which is black and white thinking. So when I was a little girl on a bus, school bus, and I started to think about how everybody worried about so many similar things and felt shame about similar things and thought they were the only ones. And we were just learning algebra, and I was thinking about the equation and that if you could cross off something on one side, it crosses it off on the other side. It makes the whole situation more clear and more simple. And it dawned on me that all connected together, and that if we could read each other's minds, it would be so healing, because we would immediately see that people were all worrying about so many similar things. And like that equation, it would exit out, and we would start more with the real issues. And it made me very happy for a moment. And I said out loud, wouldn't it be wonderful if everyone could read everyone else's mind? And in that moment, the bus went silent. And then I heard, no. And I thought, whoa, this is significant. This is a huge reaction. Why is this such a big reaction? And of course, this is where we are still. It's a big reaction because we're fearful of being seen. We're fearful of being judged. We're fearful of being burnt at the stake, literally and metaphorically, through all the ages of our ancestors. So this is a serious issue. This is a real issue. And it's part of our psychology, and it's part of why 6 years have gone by, and we have no paper trail on our electronic voting machines. And 80% of them are susceptible to being changed. So we're going to take a break pretty soon, and I want to go into some of the problem about that. And as you give little children their candy, send them blessings, that it's really about their beauty. It's really not, it's about not being afraid. It's about wearing out the fears of demons and goblins and scary movies and makeup and paint and fake blood, and that really we are becoming sane. So you can give them that little silent blessing as you give them some candy on this holy eve. And so now we're going to take a break. I'll be right back, and we'll talk more about fake vote, fake democracy. This is Patricia Sun, and you're listening to Trust the Problem.
Trust the Problem is sponsored by a nonprofit organization, the Institute of Communication for Understanding, ICU. We rely on you, our listeners, for donations to keep us on the air. To help, please visit patriciasun.com and receive a free Can't Take Sides When You Know the Earth is Round t-shirt with your donation. Thank you.
If you hear a show that you love and would like to keep it on the air, you can be a sponsor of that show for your business by visiting the host's show page on the ContactTalkRadio.com homepage.
Welcome back to Trust the Problem. I'm Patricia Sun, and today we're on Halloween. We're talking about fake vote, fake democracy, as well as Halloween. And I'm going to start really going into this article that I wrote, which I will, I guess I've become a blogger. I'm going to put it on my website, patriciasun.com, so if you'd like to see it, you can. And it had that wonderful quote. I start out with Abraham Lincoln, and I end with Abraham Lincoln, another fabulous quote by him. And I'm going to close the show with it because it's so beautiful and so well said. I've said it before. I just think it's fabulous and fits so much right now. But I think it's important almost to get it on the record that some of us are aware that with a record 73% disapproval rate for Congress with the public, that if the incumbents win, if the Republicans win, so that the House is kept, keeping a certainty that there can be no investigations on what has been already done, when there is no longer any check and balance in our three-part government, when the Congress, the executive branch, and the judiciary are all Republican, that's dangerous, especially if, and this isn't particularly about being Republican, because those people who've heard me through the years know for 35 years I've said, you know, the extreme left and the extreme right are exactly the same. They live in fear. They want power over. It's about control. And that's the problem. Not whether it's Republican or Democrat, but who wants power and control to the point of being dishonest, fixing the vote, making money illegally, doing things, not small things, but big things that take away our rights in the Constitution, just as the surveillance, electronic surveillance without any warrants of American citizens. This is really beyond the pale, because they have the FISA court and they have all kinds of checks and balances on that so that they can get it right away. They can do it immediately and come back for up to 7 days to get the warrant, just so there's a legal record. They don't want a legal record. It's secret. And the most important telling thing that I find that the media does just not report on these kinds of things, and there's so many now, I remember when reporters were asking Bush, before this came out, about the secret wiretapping of American citizens. He said in a very gratuitous way, when somebody was sort of asking questions around that, he says, well, you know, in America, you can't do that. It's illegal. You have to get a warrant. And so your question is like basically irrelevant. So he said that, and then about a year later or so, I can't remember exact timeline, but between a year and a quarter, I think, but quite a while later, it comes out through a leak, not through any honesty, through a leak, that there are secret wiretappings going on. And nobody put those two pictures together and said, what? And in fact, it's the, you know, what's the old saying, the strong, best defense is a strong offense. So what they did was say, well, the president in a time of crisis, of war on terror, has the right to just do this. No explaining that, no, he doesn't. It's against the law. It's against the Constitution. And there's not even a need for it, because all it requires is it not be secret, that some court, the FISA court, have some record of the request and some approval on it. And they approve almost everything. They almost never not don't approve. So this kind of secrecy and then bumbling over it and then having bluster and then nobody follows through. This is a little tiny example. It's not so tiny, but one of hundreds and hundreds of things that have happened. So the big one is the vote. I think people understand the idea of a democracy is that the citizens vote. Thomas Jefferson spoke so many times, so I've got many shows on it, how if the citizens are informed, the republic is safe. If there's a free press, we're going to stay free. Well, we've lost our free press because it's owned by corporations. So there's a strange link here. And I don't think it's that corporations are trying to just undermine America. I think it's expedient. It has nothing to do with that. It's expedient. There are some recent figures that, mostly I think it's generally speaking about 83% of the corporations, especially big business, donate to the Republicans. And the Republicans tend to deliver for those donations. But that means there's Democrats that they're funding also. And in the last, in October, I understand they've really increased, never the same, but they've increased the amount of donations that they give to Democrats. Because it isn't just about Republicans and Democrats. It's about power. And it's the aggregation of power into a few hands. And Republican Democrat can be used just to do that, to keep that power. And right now, the pendulum has swung to that it's Republicans. And it's the neocon, a narrow, tiny part of the Republican Party, that has the tightest links, the strongest agenda, the most fanatical position, and therefore the most energy, and who have won the, well, have taken the White House, and I can't bring myself to say they won the elections, because I really don't think they did, but they certainly have been, had their swearing in and been anointed into the position, so they have them. I think it's very interesting, and I want, as I say, to get this on the record, because if the vote was and is fraudulently changed by the wealth in a few hands, then the election, of course, is stolen, and then by definition you have no democracy. And are we there yet? Has it already been set up? I remember when Karl Rove was being indicted, and Bush had said he would fire anyone from his cabinet who was indicted, but they didn't. And then he didn't, but Rove was put like on a leave or something, and for about 3 months, I think it was, nobody heard from him. And I remember different people saying, we kind of wonder, what is he doing? What is he planning? And of course, we all know that there was a lot of gerrymandering done for the control of how many seats there would be, so they would make more Republican seats, make it by the gerrymandering that they could easily win in the House. Now, we know they've laid the groundwork for that. They admit that. They say that. They think they're proud of that. But there's easily a darker extension of all that research and computer analysis, and that is that you can find the districts where voting sites are amenable to partisan tampering, and where they're very important that they be changed, and that it would... You don't have to do everyone. You just have to pick the few that will alter the outcome. And because there's so many, it's very difficult to do the only check, and there is a check, thank God, but the only check on this are exit polls. But you can't do exit polls almost, we could if we really wanted to. And this is one thing I'm going to be asking you all who are listening. Just send in emails to all the television networks and any news media or magazines that you use, and ask particularly the news media to do more exit polls than usual. And the reason for that is that it is an antidote to the power of fixing the election, because it's used in third world countries, it's used in Europe, indeed, as a way to track if there has been any falsification or betrayal of an election. And interestingly, I believe in Germany that there was, I want to look up the statistics so I get it exactly right. It was, I think, 0.3% difference between the exit poll and the actual vote. And they're always very close. And when they are extremely discordant, it is a fixed election. Absolutely statistically, like millions and millions to one, that it's fixed. It's like the paternity test in the DNA. It's certain. So what we need are exit polls. And if we have exit polls that are done by media groups and different groups, all kinds of different groups, we'll notice discrepancies. We'll notice discrepancies between them, and if they're little, then it just could be a fair mistake or just a slight difference. That's fine. But when they're large, it is always a fix. And that's what they're used for, and that's how the third world is encouraged to keep track of whether their elections have been honest or not. Well, we have reached that place. We need that. And there's still time. There's still time because it can happen right up to the day of the election. Now, news organizations, paper and radio and television, all have budgets for polls. And if they allocate a large budget to do exit polls on the most contested or suspicious, do a little research, find out which ones are suspicious, ones where there is an attorney general at the state that's already been questioned about, like Harris was, about being partisan, being part of a political party's agenda to make their candidate win. So what we do is we put some pressure as citizens on our media, which is our last remaining, not terribly independent, but somewhat sometimes independent arm of government. It is the free press, and it's a fantastic story for whoever does it, because they will break the lid, and whether it's Democrats or Republicans, the Republicans have done it way, way more. If you go back and look at past exit poll discrepancies and the 2004 election, almost unanimously it's been Republicans. There were, I think, like one or two exceptions. If you want to get information on this, the actual specifics, there's a great article by Robert Kennedy Jr. in the Rolling Stone, and it was called, you can look it up online, "Was the 2004 Election Stolen?" And it's got example after example after example after example, all notated. So this way, you get to see that some people are paying attention. And this really has nothing to do with partisan politics. It has to do with black and white thinking. It has to do with simplistic escape thinking. But it does not have to do with parties. I have Republican friends who are just mortified with this. They don't quite know what to do. It's too embarrassing sort of to face. I have friends of friends who I remember. I think I might have already said this, a friend of mine's got a friend whose mother's a very pro-Bush, and they were together with her, and they were saying, well, what about these things that have happened? And they were bringing up the many scandals and, you know, the Duke Cunningham and the Foley thing and all the different things, and the war in Iraq being so incompetent that weapon stashes that had the... I remember this. This wasn't even covered on the air that I noticed, and I keep a tight watch. But when they were entering into Iraq right after, in the beginning, in the first part of the invasion there, they found a huge warehouse of weapons, and it had been sealed by the inspectors, the weapons inspectors, and the seal had not been broken. And so they had a CNN report on it, and they showed the seal not broken, and the soldiers came in, and they broke the seal, and they went in. Yeah, there were a lot of weapons. But what they didn't cover is the soldiers turned around and left. They turned around and left. And left this warehouse full of weapons, unguarded. And all the weapons disappeared. And where do you think the people are getting the weapons that are killing our soldiers now? It's really astounding. This is so important, so significant. So this is like, I guess, at the kindest you could say, incompetence due to a kind of simplistic style of thinking that's a little bit like almost magical. Because one of the comments actually that I heard about reporters saying, when asking George Bush and Karl Rove, why are they so certain they will not lose the House and the Senate? And the reporters, and I quote, wrote it down, the reporter said that they're almost, quote, seem to be delusionally certain that they will win the House and the Senate in November. And what that reminded me of was in the year 2000, when Al Gore was declared the winner by the major networks in Florida, using exit polls, as I said before, which are extremely accurate. One network went live to Crawford. I think it was CNN, but I'm not certain. Might have been ABC. I'm not sure. But anyway, a network went to Crawford, that I remember, and to get Bush's reaction. And they came in, and Bush is sitting there sort of sprawling, kind of with that little pose he does, his little shake his shoulders, lean back thing. And they say, well, Florida, ABC or CBS has just declared Florida for Al Gore. What do you think about that? And he almost laughed. And this is the thing that I'll never forget, because he did this smirk, smile, and he says, oh no, that's not right, we've got Florida. And all I could think of, I had this horrible feeling that it's fixed. He knows. At the very, very least, he believes he knows that he has inside information that he's going to win Florida. He was not able to hide his childish certainty, almost gloating, like laughing at the media for this. If this was legitimate, if this was a legitimate vote, or if he at least did not have any inside information, he would never respond that way. So this is dangerous. This is the total end. And this is 1984, only worse, in George Orwell's. It's slicker, it's better, it's engaged, it's happened. But the good news is, consciousness springs eternal, spirit springs eternal, truth springs eternal, hope springs eternal, and we will face it. Americans will finally get it. It's just how much mess, how much harm do we have to cause to our reputation around the world, to our children, to our heir, to our democracy, to our freedom? How many people will be harmed? Not only in other parts of the world where we may go invading and starting wars, but like Iran, which is supposedly the next on their idealist. But, and with all how bad Iraq has gone, they could only be so audacious to continue the thought, because it won't matter what people think. It is like George, it is like Goebbels said, you know, it's the big lie. The big lie works best. And Karl Rove has done this. He's done the big lie. And I even suspect they do this little vaccination kind of thing on their behavior. It's like the time they planted a microphone in their own candidate's office, and then a week before the election exposed it to the media and said, see, the other side is tapping our office. And then as it turned out, with the FBI records and the kind of battery that was in it, they found out that was not true. But all that faded away because they got the power already, and then their person got elected. So there was no investigation, so it doesn't go any further. And this is a modus operandi. Get the power right before the election, get it, win, and then don't have any investigations. And this has gone on to an extreme extent, and anybody who pays attention to the media knows this. And anybody who's listened to me for 35 years knows I never do this. I never talk about politics this way. I say pray for everybody, which I still say, of course. Pray for everyone. Pray for the Republicans to realize what they're doing. Pray for the Democrats to realize they're being wimpy because they're just as much wanting to have power instead of just letting things fall where they fall by telling the truth and seeing what happens. Still playing politics And we've made politics like Halloween have a bad meaning. I mean, it's the reverse, Halloween. Well, I guess not. Halloween was holy, and we've made it a boogeyman night. Now we have, and we've tried to deflate the power of Halloween, by the way, by having our children go out in costume and make it silly so that we can heal our fears. And I think that's why Jon Stewart and so many of and the Colbert Report and all of these I forgot the other fellow, forgive me. anyway, there's so many that use humor now to bring out facts. And that's necessary because if we're fearful, we polarize and we tend to want to be fooled if it will make us not have to worry and think we're better. So that's the psychology behind the devastation of what's about to happen, I believe. I will be so delighted to be proven wrong, and that because we pray for them, the people who could fix it right at the last moment will say, no, I don't think I want to do this. We'll probably win without it. We don't have to do this. And I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans. I pray that people let this be honest. And if it is, then I am pretty certain the very, very least the Democrats will win the House. If they do not, I absolutely don't believe the election was honest, and I hope there will be sufficient exit polls to prove me wrong, or, unfortunately, to prove me right. I hope not. I'd be so happy to be wrong. And I think that we have, you know, a week. We have a week to see. And it's time for us to still stay citizens and stay awake and not be fearful and not get clouded out, because even if the worst happens, we're still here, we still count, we're still alive, we can still do protests, we can still write letters, we can still speak up. It'll just be harder. But it's time. Call your friends, tell them to vote, and to ask for exit polls from their media. Because this is a time it really matters. And even though I don't agree with everything the Democrats do by a long shot, the deadlock is too dangerous. And we really need a change. We need an investigation. We need to be able to self-correct. We need to look at ourselves to make America healthy. This is what makes a human being a grown-up. It makes them a healthy person psychologically, not needing to drink or take drugs in their despair, or to be escapist or aggressive, because if you are mature, you look at yourself, you look at where you've made mistakes, and you do your best to correct them. That's one of the steps that in AA that's most crucial. You rectify the wrongs you've done under the influence. And we do get under the influence of escapism. And we use television and media as a drug to keep staying escapist. Now, I say that and I mean it. I don't think that's true of all television. I don't think that's true of all people. And I don't think it's true all the time. Television is a magnificent thing that brings us all kinds of wonderful insight about the world and knowledge and information. It's just a bit crippled about being straightforward journalists right now. Now, part of that could be that there's only, you know, 5 or 6 corporations that own all the major networks around the country, all over the country, that there's this lock on it. That could be. That could be part of the reason. But even then, it's made up of people. We all have souls. We're all connected. And if we speak to that spirit in each of us, and we speak from that spirit in each of us, which is what namaste means, by the way. It's the God in me salutes the God in you. And when we have that attitude, and it's not a gotcha, and sometimes it feels like a gotcha if you speak up, because it's gone so long and gone so far, and too much has been done, but it still needs to be said. And this is the waking up. I do not hate the Republicans. I do not hate George Bush. I do not hate Karl Rove. you know, I see him as an insecure man who has tapped into the insecurity of the nation and accrued power by a fluke, and a fluke that I think is in a sense destined to be, because America is ready to grow up. And this is like an adolescent bad thing, you know, something you've done out of poor judgment in your need to be popular. And we're nations are just aggregates of human beings, and they have a psychology, and they have stages of development. We're a young country, and we started out magnificent and beautiful and hopeful, and we had our ugliness, and we had slavery, and we had our robbing the land from the Indians and brutalizing them and really killing them so that we could steal their land. We have shadow to face. And we have a mythos about ourselves that we don't do that kind of thing. But part of growing up is you have to see where you have done that kind of thing. And when I said we, you know, probably nobody of us has been alive when that happened. It was our ancestors. And it is something that we still need to acknowledge so that it doesn't keep happening. So we end it. So we make life more healing, more mature, more sensible, more awake, more able. And this is our job as citizens, as human beings, as spiritual souls attempting to manifest into the physical world the beauty and the insight and the more that is. And that's why having a problem of this magnitude is a crisis and a danger that's huge with an opportunity that is huge. It really is the opportunity of the evolutionary leap for us to be grown up. So have heart, be awake, tell the truth, send love, and pray for us all that we wake up and we see and we have exit balls. I wish you every blessing. Thank you for listening. I'm Patricia Sun, and this is Trust the Problem.
You've been listening to Trust the Problem with Patricia Sun. This program and its content is copywritten to Patricia Sun, all rights reserved, 2006.